Welcome to the Untold Stories of Central Minnesota. This is Arts and Cultural Heritage producer Jeff Carmack, and in today's episode, we'll be visiting the Stearns History Museum for yet another of their monthly breakfast clubs. The breakfast club takes place at the Stearns History Museum on the first Wednesday of every month, and this time around, it was a chance for their new executive director, Carrie Essig, to introduce herself to a packed room of Stearns History Museum patrons. Carrie Essig has a long history of interest in history, and especially museum science. In fact, her first experience with the Stearns History Museum was when she was a little child visiting the museum, where she said that one day she would come back and run the place. Well, as things have come to full circle, we've got excerpts today from her Breakfast Club talk, and then on our website at kvsc.org, under the podcast and Untold Stories of Central Minnesota tab, we'll have the entirety of her hour-long presentation posted for your perusal. And now, with anticipation of many a partnership program, the executive director of the Stearns History Museum, Carrie Essig.
Thank you all for being here. I'm humbled, honestly. Who knew that a director saying, sure, if you want to know a little bit more about me, I'm happy to share, would attract a crowd like this, and I really appreciate all of you being here today. Part of the reason that I volunteered to do this was because a lot of you in this room are going to be seeing me on a lot more regular basis. It's important for me, if I'm asking you to support us, that you know a little bit more about me. And as I started to reflect on this presentation, but also on my journey through history, now there's a historical word, we took a journey, right? I realized that history has been a part of who I am since as long as I can remember. It's because I had parents who were socially active and social activists at the same time. I have a picture of me sitting on my mother's shoulders at the state capitol demanding more equal rights for women in the 70s. I was probably 3. And she went on to lobby for vocational and technical education for a long time. My dad was in tech before tech was a word. And spent most of his life traveling the country developing software systems for manufacturing plants. And so he delved into the technology and then figured out ways to communicate how that technology worked to people, which is really complicated. And I still some days don't completely get it. But so as I started this presentation, I wanted to make sure that you saw a little bit of me, saw a little bit of who I am as a historian, but also as a person. And then I want to give you some ideas and some thoughts about kind of where we're going. Who's Carrie Essig? Well, there she is. I'm not the vampire, I'm the pioneer. In 1976, guess what I was in the kindergarten parade? I was Laura Ingalls Wilder, of course. And being a Minnesota girl, I really connected with Laura Ingalls Wilder. So much so that a couple of years later, I reinvented it and came back as Laura Ingalls II. We traveled the country looking for history. My dad would pack us in the car, and one year we drove all the way to Los Angeles from Minneapolis, St. Paul, and stopped at every possible tourist attraction and every historic site we could find along the way. The next couple years later, he drove us all the way to Washington, D.C. and back. And we were at the Supreme Court building in Washington, and my brother came out of the restroom. Oh my God! You're never going to guess who I saw. I was pretty impressed that he knew who he saw. I just washed my hands next to Thurgood Marshall. Of course, my mother looks at him and goes, thank God you washed your hands. But, you know, and but that moment, as I was looking at these photos and reflecting last night, got me thinking about how much access to history and how much access to people has changed. Do you really think that in this day and age, any one of us could be in a restroom next to Ruth Bader Ginsburg or any of them? Of course not. Because we worry about safety. We worry about crazy. We worry about all sorts of things that I didn't think about when I was a kid. And so think about not just your history, but how your access to history has changed. And that was something that really struck me last night as I was thinking about this. That was one of our favorite family trips, which is also part of the reason I got a picture of my brother in here. History sort of happened for me. I graduated with a master's degree in U.S. history, as John said, with an emphasis in museum administration. So guess what? I always wanted to be here working in museums. It's what I've always wanted to do my whole life. I've worked in local history services all my life because I love it. Every day, people say, look, you know, isn't it hard work? What's it like being in a museum every day? I love coming to my job every day. And most days, it doesn't feel like a job, which is great. I've got the best job going. I've worked at the Minnesota Historical Society Historic Sites. I've worked at the Shakopee, Mdewakanton, and Sioux community. What did that teach me? A lot. I learned how to ask different questions about history. One of the best exhibits that we ever did down at the Shakopee, Mdewakanton, and Sioux community was an exhibit about, we took the conversation that the Minnesota Humanities Commission did about why treaties matter. But I asked different questions because the perspective was different. You know, as a woman who is a descendant from German immigrants, English immigrants, I got a chance to think to myself, well, how would I have felt if I was here first? And suddenly I saw these people that didn't look very much like me, and didn't talk like me, and didn't act like me, who suddenly were talking about things about owning land that we didn't really understand anything about. And I'm not judging good, bad, at this, you know, that's not what I'm doing. I'm just saying, think about how you have to ask the questions differently, and think about the different answers you might get if you ask those questions differently. So I learned a lot being able to work at the Shakopee, Mdewakanton, Sioux community, and I learned a lot about treaties, and I learned a lot about rights. I learned a lot about responsibility, and I am forever grateful for the years that I got to work for them. I grew up in St. Paul. I'm a public school kid and a very strong public school advocate. I think public schools are the best things going for everybody. That's not saying that parochial schools are not good. I think they're all great. But public education has been very good to me, and it's been very good to everybody in my family. But I grew up in a household of dialogue, and that's what I learned, is that the only way to solve a problem is to have a conversation. So that's what we do. That's what we're going to do here at the museum. So why history? This quote from James Baldwin, and I typed this in a little bit goofy, but Alan Moore is the person that took the picture, so I apologize. I was trying to make sure that he was credited for the photo and the way it worded. So James Baldwin wrote this. And I read a lot of James Baldwin when I was in college and graduate school. The great force of history comes from the fact that we carry it within us, are unconsciously controlled by it in many ways, and history is literally present in all that we do. So if you think about it, an hour from now, we're all history again, right? History informs every decision we make every day. This is me. It's personal, it's community, it's universal. And in order to help most people understand this concept, you have to hook them with something we call edutainment. So if I stood up here and went, hi, my name's Gary, I'm the museum director, y'all all be asleep, right? Moving around a little bit, we're having a conversation, trying to get you engaged a little bit. We're going to do the same thing with the exhibits. We're going to do the same thing with some of our programming. We're going to do the same thing with a lot of... We're reinventing ourselves right now. And so you're going to see different types of programming going forward, but I promise that programs like this that you all are so interested in are not going to go away. I think that's the biggest fear, is that you're going to make change and you're going to take away all the things we love. Well, no. There's 154,000 people in this county. And there's probably a little bit more if you take that part of Benton and Sherburne County that's the other half of St. Cloud, right? And you bring us all together, and there's plenty of history to go around, folks, right? We just have to figure out some different ways to do that. So, and museum and historic sites in particular are where history and entertainment come together and create magic. So that's what we're going to do over the next couple of years. We're going to create some magic. Weistern's history. John caught me. John tells that story, but it's dead on. When I was graduating from college and graduating from graduate school and looked around at all the county museums in the world, and what I love about county museums is you can tell really big stories and you can tell really small stories all in one space. Because what we do is reflective of the bigger culture and the bigger things that are going on in the world. But we can tell very personal stories, and we can tell very personal stories that MHS can't. And that places like the Smithsonian can't, because they're telling these really big stories, right? So we can tell the pieces of the stories and connect. without necessarily worrying about what they're doing all the time. I've always wanted to be an executive director of a historical society, and I love what I call smallish museums, because this isn't really a small place. I've worked in smaller. And Stern's History Museum is on the edge of a whole new reinvention, and I get to help with that. I get to lead that. So I mentioned a couple other stories. And I want to go back to that Shakopee Midwakan and Sioux thing, and I just said Mayflower. So I want you to think about that for a minute. And I'm going to give you an idea of kind of how I try to think about when I'm working with other people and trying to understand who they are and how we all think as a community. I worked with a woman at the Shakopee. I worked for the State Historical Society. And my job was to go around to all of these museums, and I got assigned, frankly, to one of the most difficult stories in Minnesota history right out of graduate school, the conflicts in the War of 1862. And I thought to myself, good Lord, what did I get myself into? And they said, congratulations, you're the person that gets to go out and try to figure out how to communicate with the Dakota populations when they don't want to have anything to do with the State Historical Society for a number of reasons. Okay, well, and I must have looked either really ignorant or really crazy, I'm not sure which, but I went out and started literally knocking on doors and saying, we need to get this story told, how are we going to do it? I apologize if I'm being rude, I don't know how else to do this, because the only way my mother ever taught me to do something is to talk to somebody if you wanted to get to know them, right? And for about a month and a half, I would sit in these meetings, and Vernell Wabashaw would sit across the room. And she wouldn't look at me, she wouldn't speak to me, her son wouldn't look at me, he wouldn't speak to me. But I could tell they were watching me. And at some meeting, I mentioned that my family came over on the Mayflower, so I recognized that I was an immigrant. And Vernell looked at me and she said, ha. She said, from now on, you're the boat lady. Now think about that. I could have been one of those people who got really offended because I didn't like the name, or I didn't like what she was saying, or I didn't appreciate what she was saying. But the reality was that I took a step back and I asked a couple of friends and they said, you're in. And I said, what do you mean I'm in? One, an elder talked to you. That's huge. Remember, nobody would talk to me for weeks, months. Two, she's laughing. Humor in Indian country is everything. So if somebody's teasing you, there's a reason for it. And three, I took it as a sign of great respect that she took enough time to figure out who I was and gave me a name that she could tease me about for the rest of my life. Now, I apologize to Vernell because I did not ask Vernell to be able to tell his story before, and I normally would do that. I haven't had a chance to reconnect with her since I've been back. But history goes full circle, because here I am in Stearns County. And I started reading about what's, you know, going through our archives and looking through some of our history to try to figure out kind of what Stearns County has looked like over the years. And I start to hear about all these skirmishes and things back and forth between the Dakota and the Ojibwe, right? And we're kind of right in the middle of an area where people have come in and out as immigrants forever, including the Dakota and the Ojibwe, who were here in some way, shape, or form, but we're sort of always tug-of-warring over some of this land. So this is how I think about history, and sometimes it's easier to tell a story than it is to philosophize it out.
You're in tune to 88.1 FM KVSC and the Untold Stories of Central Minnesota. Today we're hearing excerpts from a presentation from Carrie Essig, the Executive Director for the Stearns History Museum. For the entirety of her speech, you can find that on our website at kvsc.org under the podcast and Untold Stories of Central Minnesota tab. And now we get back to the conversation as she talks about what made St. Cloud what it is today, granite.
Couple of other pictures just to show you kind of where I'm still going with things. Quarry Park. When we built this great granite exhibit in here years and years ago, Quarry Park wasn't open to the public. The only way to get in there was to jump over a fence. Some of us did it. We probably shouldn't have. Probably shouldn't admit it, but we did. Now, museum staff can go to the park and we can have a historian in the park and tell the story of how we quarry granite, why we quarry granite, what it was like to be a guy who worked in the quarries, what it was like to be his wife taking care of that, right? How dangerous it was, it's crazy. How the machine operated. And the park has got the facility and we've got the history. So you put it together, you've got a great partnership going on there. I love what they're doing in Sauk Center. I just had a meeting with the Sartell folks a couple nights ago, not really a meeting, more of a conversation, I guess. And I said, there's enough history to go around. So what a great opportunity, what they're doing up at Sauk Center with this building and taking a piece of history and turning it into their museum. I can't wait to get inside and see it. I haven't had a chance to do that yet. And I haven't gotten to this one yet, but I did some research and now I'm trying to figure out exactly where I'm going. You know, the St. Ben's campus, St. Benedict's campus is on the National Register, right? I found all this great stuff in the archives about the National Register process, the nominations, all of that. And then we started looking and they said this one building is on the National Register. And it's part of what made that area qualify as a national district. Where's the building? And so we all start talking about it. We know the building's still there. We think we know which one it is. But it's not named that anymore. It's changed names like two or three times. It's been added on to maybe once. If you stare at it long enough, you can see it, and you realize it's the same one they took a picture of several years ago. But I haven't had, that's my next project. I haven't had a chance to get in there yet. We put the Luxembourg Church on the advertisement for today, so you can hear about the Luxembourg Church. Well, guess what? I haven't made it quite to Luxembourg Church yet. There's several churches that I haven't made it into yet, because there's too many, and they're all so beautiful, I don't know where to start. But that's next on my list. So what's next? First of all, those who don't remember the past are condemned to repeat it. We all know that, right? Have we all heard that phrase before? There's another one I've seen recently that says historians are in the worst place because they know we're going to repeat history and they can't stop it. It's like we're sitting there watching people going, we've learned this lesson before, people. And the museum, this is me. The museum is a place where we can learn from each other, talk about difficult subjects, and resolve conflict. Here's a safe space for us to talk. Right? Sometimes a political meeting isn't the place to do that. Sometimes you don't feel safe in school every day. Sometimes, you know, walking through the shopping mall may not be the best place to have a conversation about something really difficult, but here's a place you can do that, and you can do that all the time. Because our doors are open, and because we have the opportunity to look at the research, we have the opportunity to look back and say, has this ever happened before? Do we want the same outcome? Do we want a different outcome? I say for the youngest people, it's a chance to learn that museums are good places. When I look at a three-year-old, I have to remember, as much as I want an academic story to come out of it, really the only academic story a three-year-old cares about is whether or not their house is going to be there when they get home. Because they're in their mind, you know, home is it, right? So you want little ones to be able to come into the museum and play and learn and experience at a very basic level. I want them to look at the turtle in the natural history exhibit that we've got on, and then I want them to walk out to the park and find the turtle. And it may be three or four trips before they actually see the turtle, because usually the turtle's hiding in the woods, but I guarantee you at one of those trips that kid will see that turtle. For a city kid, okay, so I'm talking especially just the kids in district like 742 right now, they've maybe never seen a turtle before, so send them out in the woods to look for a turtle if they don't know what it looks like is really kind of hard, right? I can't tell you the number of kids that used to come to visit the Gibbs Farm when I worked at the Gibbs Farm at Ramsey County Historical Society who mistook Oreo the goat for a Jersey cow. So y'all are laughing about this, but here's my deal. When another kid comes to me and says, why do I need cows anymore? I can get beef at the grocery store. People, that's what we're dealing with in some of the cities. Okay? So we're all sitting up here going, we know where we're going to get the cows. We're going to go to the neighbor's farm and we're going to trade the neighbor's old dairy cow for fresh meat. And we've got it figured out in Stearns County. Because we're neighbors, we're friends, and we know each other. And we know who's got what, right? But there's kids in the city that don't get it. They truly don't understand that if you don't grow the produce, if you don't grow the cows, so to speak, let them grow up, grow old, they're not going to have something to eat at dinner that night. So to me, that's a serious issue. We laugh. Kid doesn't know what a cow is. But let's be real, people. If a kid doesn't know what a cow is, if a kid doesn't know that if their water's not clean, they can't drink it, If a kid doesn't understand that, and more importantly, if a kid doesn't feel safe, if we have a kid who's new to this community, who doesn't feel safe, who maybe didn't have fresh drinking water, who maybe didn't have a meal on the table every night, and doesn't know where they're going when they get home after school because they're not sure they're really going to be able to get in the house, you know, can we really teach history? You know, we're a community that needs to really be thinking about how are we teaching our children and how can museums do that differently than a school can. The school's got a certain amount of responsibilities, we've got another, right? And if a kid can come and have fun and learn here and then take that to the next level, isn't that an amazing gift that we've given them? So what's coming to the museum, folks? New exhibits. I will tell you right now, we're getting things open again. We've been closed for 3 months for construction. We just got to get the doors open. Pan exhibits coming back. The pan car will be back up in that whole auxiliary room. What I will tell you is that right now, the new exhibit for the pan car, when you walk into the pan exhibit, you're going to walk in and you're going to feel like you're on a factory floor. We've redone the walls so that it looks like you're walking right into the factory. It's really kind of cool. We've got an exhibit going in on the firehouses and the fire stations and the history of the fire departments here in Stearns County. Why are we doing that? We just put in a fire suppression system. What else would we do? Right? I don't know. I'm going to put Disco Inferno and Burn Baby Burn on the 1970s exhibit as another little kitschy piece of this whole thing. I'm kidding. But the point is that you have to have a little fun with history, too. And so we're going to have a little fun with some new exhibits. We're going to be creative. Don't get me wrong. But we're also going to take the time and do it right. Because I want to make sure that every time you walk into this museum, you see something new, something slightly different, and something kind of wow. New programs. New programs are key to a lot of what we're doing. Again, remember I said, we're not going to take away this, I promise, because I know how many people love Breakfast Club. But we are going to start doing some different things. We are going to start offering tours again on a regular basis on Saturdays through the galleries. For those people who want them. I like to come into a museum, tell me what's there, and then leave me alone for 3 hours. That's okay. But there's other people that walk into a museum and think about it. Think about the first time you walk into a doctor's office, and it's a brand new doctor, and you've never been there before. And you know there's a counter in front, so you know that you've probably got to talk to somebody, but you have no idea what's behind the curtain, right? Well, a museum's kind of the same thing. We're all kind of seasoned museum professionals here, right? Or at least museum patrons. Think about that person that's never been in a museum before, doesn't know what to expect, and is pretty darn sure that when their kids get a little rowdy, they're going to get yelled at. I don't ever want that to happen at the Stearns History Museum. I want somebody to come in. I want them to feel welcome. I want them to find their face somewhere in the museum. I want them to be able to explore. I want kids to be able to get a little rowdy, and we're not going to worry about whether or not they break things because we're going to build them so that they can't. And I want to make sure that whether you want that quiet space or whether you want that children's space, that there's something for everybody here. Programs are going to be things like participating in watershed days and water days with the Sauk Rapids Watershed District. School districts' budgets keep getting tighter. They can't bring kids to museums as much as they can, and frankly, it's not the school districts, it's the busing that causes this entire problem with field trips. Why can't you do field trips anymore? Because it costs $900 to bring a kid from Sartell to here on a bus. You know, and so you're trying to figure that out, right? But we can go to the kids. And if Sauk River Watershed District can figure out how to bring 500 kids to one place, and then the Stearns History Museum is there teaching those kids, we're doing our job. It's about finding new ways to engage with you guys. Breakfast Club's great, but is there something else we're missing? And so expect to hear from me once in a while and say, okay, today I want to ask you, what do you want to see next? What do you want to do next? Could we do better bus trips? Could we do better breakfast clubs? Could we do an evening program if we knew that it wasn't going to be dark outside and we couldn't see to get in the building, that kind of thing? We're going to be doing some innovative things there just to make sure that everybody always feels welcome. We're looking at some and increasing our partnerships, and I'll talk a little bit more about that in a minute. And then new uses of the space. Other new exhibits, I'm gonna throw this out there and we're gonna let you know what's coming. Next year we're gonna honor the anniversary and commemorate the anniversary of D-Day, 75th anniversary. We're not exactly sure how that's all going to play out right now, but right now we're talking about using the park and having some reenactors and making it quite the experience. More to come on that. Next fall, we're planning on bringing in, we've put in the request, we have to wait for the Smithsonian to tell us we've got it, but we've put in a request for an exhibit from the Smithsonian called Righting a Wrong. That exhibit is about the Japanese internment camps that happened in this country during World War II. That's a difficult subject, right, to talk about? It's really hard to talk about it sometimes in the schools. It's hard for us to kind of acknowledge that this happened in our own country. It's hard to figure out how that experience and how the decisions that we made then impact who we are and how we make decisions today. So those are going to be the tough questions we're going to start to ask. How did we let something like that happen? Why did we let it happen? Do we want it to ever happen again? I'm not sure everybody in this room feels the same way about that. So again, safe space where we can have a dialogue about it. And then in the community, again, stronger partnerships in history where it happens. So like I said, going out to Quarry Park instead of going here. Last but not least, we've got some other partners coming up, and then I'll let y'all go. The Children's Museum. There's still talk about a children's museum in town. I don't know whether that's their choice and their deal as they're thinking about what they might do. I think the more museums in a town, the better. So if that's something that group decides to get going and moves forward with, we'll support that any darn way we can. High Coppers, what an awesome group. They're going to develop some programming where kids are coming into the museum and learning something and then going outside and seeing it. How awesome is that, right? They do programs now in all the county parks where they get kids out and they get them looking for things while they're walking through the parks. We're also talking with the parks and with High Coppers about maybe doing some interpretive signage in the parks so that when you're walking along and you're looking at all the beautiful nature, there might also be a sign there that tells you historically what was this. The Paramount. I love the Paramount. And I was really excited when I found out that Prince's former band is going to be their headliner at their fall fundraiser. We're talking with the Paramount about how we can do more programming like we did when we did Minnesota 13 a couple of years ago. And then, of course, District 742. There's lots of school districts in Stearns County, and I want to make sure that at some point we're working with all of them. But there's definitely, and you read it in the papers and everything else, a need in 742 for other opportunities for kids to learn. Those teachers are focused on making sure those kids learn what they need to learn and every day meet the academic standards that they need to meet. Where museums come in is museums are the place where kids can stop worrying about whether they're going to pass a test on Friday and start doing a little bit more critical thinking and start doing a little bit more creative thinking and they never have to worry about whether they're right or wrong, which is really kind of cool. I mean, how often do you get to do that when you learn and you don't really care at the end of the day whether the outcome's right or wrong? It's just whether or not you've had a chance to think critically. So those are all partners that we're working with. The city and the county, of course, you know, our county's our biggest partner, both financially but also in terms of the support that we get and the ways that we swap program spaces and things like that. And then, of course, the city. So some parting thoughts. People without the knowledge of their past, origin, and culture is like a tree without roots. I love that one, especially since we've got such a great genealogy group that meets right here in this building all the time. Second one's my favorite. Well-behaved women seldom make history. Laurel Thatcher Ulrich is one of the people who has made that quote famous. And she used to find very small niches of documents in research archives all over mostly New England and write about them. She wrote a book called A Midwife's Tale, which was one of my favorite reads when I was in graduate school. But usually the people that were underserved in our community in terms of documentation were women. And it was because the documentation that people chose to save was that was, you know, sort of official documents, and a lot of that was written by men. And then my favorite one from Maya Angelou is, history, despite its wrenching pain, cannot be unlived. So you can look back on a memory and it's extremely painful. You can look back on our history and it's extremely painful. But if faced with courage, it doesn't need to be lived again. And I try to live that every day, so. That's it, that's me.
We've been hearing excerpts of Executive Director of the Stearns History Museum, Carrie Essig, from her presentation at The Breakfast Club, the Stearns History Museum's monthly program, as she introduced herself to the community. For the entirety of her presentation, you can find links to it on our website at kvsc.org under the Podcasts and Untold Stories of Central Minnesota tab. For links to more information on everything the Stearns History Museum has to offer, and there really is a lot, find that on their website at Stearns-museum.org or visit our website at kvsc.org and look under the area events because many of them are listed there. This has been Arts and Cultural Heritage producer Jeff Carmack, and the Untold Stories of Central Minnesota is made possible through support from the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund and has been produced at KVSC, a proud member of AMPRS, Diverse Radio for Minnesota's communities.